Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and consider this your warning that April 1st is tomorrow.
It is tomorrow.
If you're listening live on the radio right now.
Now, I can't remember. Your kids like playing tricks.
They love April Fool's Day.
And what's going to happen to you?
Well, I don't know. They don't tell me. That's the whole point.
Well,
right?
But what usually befalls you?
Oh, they just do silly jokes, or I can't even think of. Mark's always in on it, too, of course.
Oh, he's not a victim. He's...
Oh, no.
He's complicit.
He is entirely complicit.
Oh, well, shame on him.
Instigator. I have a house of three children.
Well, that seems like you should be recruiting them to your cause right. Against him.
Does this sound like Mark?
Did
you?
What? No.
Does this sound like Mark? Like a he's kind of goofy?
Yeah, it does. Back from the volleyball days, it definitely does. When he was dating you.
Oh, there we go. Oh.
Are we going to get some good stories?
I hope so.
So we should get right to it.
We could. Well, first of all, I'm going to say, so we have Kirk Fawcett. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Sure thing.
Glad you joined us. We'll introduce you again. We're going to talk about you. But first, I'm going to bring back a word.
You're bringing back a word. Bringing
and
it back.
Now, this word is almost already in my use, in my language.
It's already in your vocabulary.
Yes,
all
exactly.
Right.
Verily.
Verily.
Verily. It's okay. An adverb.
An adverb. Verily is how you go about something.
Nope.
Okay.
Any
you want to try to
Kirk?
Guess? Verily?
It's an old
totally
historic
wrong.
Word that isn't used anymore, and we're bringing them back.
Verily. kind of like maybe?
Well, it's certainly or truly. Verily.
Oh. Verily.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I say very a lot. And that's one of those words that kind of like you shouldn't use ever.
Oh. You do use verily
a
lot?
Well, I use very. So I could see where I could add verily. Certainly.
I would prefer verily to very. Because very doesn't add anything.
Right. It doesn't. It's a nonsense word.
It was exciting. It was very exciting.
Right.
Okay.
Exactly.
So wasn't it exciting? Why does very make it more exciting? I've always hated that word.
Verily, Mac.
Verily.
Verily.
Yes.
Certainly
right.
Or truly.
Okay.
Because
that's
the word for the day.
That's the word for the day.
So let's get right to it because this is going to be a good show and I want to hear lots of stories about the two of you. So.
Okay.
All right. So these are things that happen tomorrow, March 31st. So as always, icebreakers or things to talk about. 1776. In a letter dated March 31st, 1776, Abigail Adams writes to her husband, John Adams, urging him and the other members of the Continental Congress not to forget about the nation's women when fighting for America's independence from Great Britain. Are you familiar at all with this letter?
No.
Oh, it's really famous. So I took a little part of it because I thought you might like it. The future First Lady wrote in part, "I long to hear that you have declared an independency. And by the way, in the new code of laws, which I suppose it will be necessary for you to make, I desire you would remember the ladies and be more generous and favorable to them than your ancestors. Do not put such unlimited power into the hands of the husbands. Remember, all men would be tyrants if they could.
I love it.
If particular care and attention is not paid to the ladies, we are determined to foment a rebellion and will not hold ourselves bound by any laws in which we have no voice or representation."
This is great.
That's why I love Abigail Adams.
I feel like I'm just going to blow up that quote and put it in my girls' bathroom. They can look at it on their mirror.
Yeah. So 1854, the Treaty of Kanagawa, the Commodore Perry forces Japan to open the ports to us.
Oh,
it's kind of a big deal. And of course, that brings in Randall McDonald, the local guy that we've talked about. 1870, Thomas Mundy Peterson. You've never heard of him, I bet.
I have not.
No, none of us have, and we should. Thomas Mundy Peterson of Perth Amboy, New Jersey, is the first African-American to vote in the U.S. under provisions of the 15th Amendment to the Constitution in a local election on the town's charter.
Ooh.
I kind of like that.
I like that, too.
But 1870 seems late. 1889, the Eiffel Tower opens.
Okay.
Have we ever been?
Nope. Never been.
Nope.
Ever?
Have,
yeah, me neither. Well, dang, we got nothing to talk about then. All right. 1918, the first daylight savings time in the U.S. goes into effect.
And what word did you say, Mac?
Daylight saving time.
Thank you.
Yes.
Good job.
1959, the Dalai Lama begins his exile. 1991, the Warsaw Pact ends. And we've had world peace ever since. It's been wonderful. Yeah. But I don't know if this is the first time we've had this in our history highlights on this show. I have a tie, a three-way tie.
A three-way.
Yeah, I don't know that I've had a three-way tie before. So I could not choose which one of these was the most important.
Okay, we'll help.
So 1774, Parliament passes the Boston Port Act, closing the port of Boston and demanding the city's residents pay for the nearly $1 million, in today's dollars, worth of tea dumped into the harbor. It was kind of a big one towards our road to revolution.
Right. They didn't like that.
No, they did not like suddenly having our port closed and we got to pay for that tea. 1933, the Civilian Conservation Corps is authorized by Congress.
And that
FDR's tree army.
I like that.
Planted 3 million people, 3 million young men participate. They plant in the 9 years they're in existence, and I hope I'm remembering this correctly because I didn't write it down, something like 30 million trees or 40 million trees.
Oh, thank you.
And goodness. A bunch of parks that they developed, mm-hmm. The what we consider the Adirondack style of park architecture.
Okay.
Is them. Here locally, there were a number of things. They built the road up towards Saddle Mountain.
Oh, okay.
And then they did a lot of dunes in Gerhardt, planting grass and things like that. So huge, huge impact.
Yep.
That was huge.
I'm a good tree hugger, so that's a good one.
And I love the CCC, so that's why it's in there. But 1948 is my third one. U.S. Congress passes the Marshall Aid Act to rehabilitate war-torn Europe. We rebuild Europe after it's destroyed. Kind of big.
Yep.
Kind of important.
Yep. Yep.
So I couldn't choose. So those are my three.
I like them. Yeah.
They're all important for different reasons.
They are. They are very different. So, okay. We'll go along with that then, or I'll go along with that.
And somebody else who is important for multiple reasons.
Yes, Kirk Fawcett. Good segue.
How was that for a segue?
That was.
Thanks for joining us tonight. We love having people on our show. We love our guests. And so we're happy to talk with you tonight and learn a little bit more about you.
Oh, happy to be here.
And Kirk and I don't even know each other. It's my husband and Kirk that have known each other forever. I mean, everybody knows.
The Mark connection.
I know, always.
Yeah, everybody knows Mark.
He does. So let's talk.
I did watch you on the news.
Oh, there we go.
Well, you know, Mark would
talk about it
back in the day.
Mark, yes.
Mark was always slicking his hair. Whether he was getting ready to go see you or just saw you.
Yes.
But then, you know, naturally, we had to look on the TV to see who it was that he was dating.
Yep. And then we were married for 2 years, and I still kept working. So,
yep,
yeah,
you did.
It was a kind of a interesting way to be married. We had two different homes and all that good stuff. So, but I digress.
And he got you to move from the Portland area.
He did.
To Astoria.
I know.
Yeah.
Warrenton,
right.
Yes.
That's true.
And we're in Hammond. I love it. Oh, I'm definitely a coastal girl. So tell us about you. Are you from this area originally?
Yeah. Born and raised.
And your family?
Lived out in Olney. And, you know, my grandma and she grew up in Elsie.
Okay.
And then you know, she was a Finnish woman and, you know, moved to Astoria and worked at the Bumblebee Cannery for eons.
Oh, I love that.
And my grandpa, he was a jazz musician, and I think it was the Elks that he played for. He played a trumpet with them.
Wow.
And, you know, my dad, he came from North Dakota. So he's 100% Norwegian. My grandma was half Finn and half Swede because my grandpa was Swede. No, my grandma was all Finn. My grandpa was all Swede. And my dad came here in World War II and was stationed at Tongue Point. And that's where he met my mom. And
aww.
Long story short, boom,
and
here I am.
So what was your mom's last name? What's the, because they're
a good Finn name, yeah. Mackie.
There you go. Yeah. Mackie.
I mean, I don't know, being that my dad was Norwegian, I always asked him, you know, we're not like Johnson or something like that. How are we Fawcett? How's that word Fawcett come out of Norwegian?
But it did.
I know. He never gave me an answer.
He didn't know. Yeah. And where did his parents come from, originate?
He grew up in North Dakota and Minnesota, okay. Where there was a huge group of Norwegians. I don't know a whole lot about that side of the family. I mean, we went and visited there once.
Yeah.
Primarily, I know about my mom's side. It was here in Astoria and Elsie and that, so on forth.
So was there anything about a Norwegian marrying or courting?
True.
Outside of Norwegian? I mean, were they like, what are you dating a Norwegian boy for?
No, not really.
Okay.
I know he was proud of being a Norwegian.
Mm.
And I know as I grew up, I always was proud of my heritage of, you know, not being a Heinz 57. You know, I mean, granted, Swede, Finn, and Norwegian. And I usually say, hey, I'm half Norwegian.
So what was growing up in Olney like? We've never really interviewed anybody that grew up in Olney. So talk about that a little bit.
You know, back in the day, growing up, when we didn't have TV, and it seemed like a million miles from Astoria because cars and transportation and the money for gas and, you know, all of that kind of stuff kind of kept you isolated out in Olney. But it's a great place. And I take a lot of pride saying that I'm from Olney. And Olney had its own school and
right. It
went all the way through eighth grade. And then off to the Astoria High School, but then it finally merged with the Luce and Clark, which that was a good thing too. Mm-hmm. But Olney is a great place to live.
And it was the only schoolhouse, right?
Yeah.
And how many kids were in that kindergarten? Or was it kindergarten through eighth, you said? Or
you know, yeah, it went one through eight.
One through eight.
And, you know, like in our class, I think there was 14.
Yeah.
And you know, so that was kind of about the same,
right?
For all the classes, I remember we were pretty split to, you know, half guys and half girls.
Nice.
But it was, you know, the quality education was really, really good, and you know, there were a lot of events at the Grange out there. You know, so you did have that community feeling that was really nice.
And then what was it like when the 14 of you went to Astoria High School? Was there a big transition or did you fit in right away?
Well, Olney merged with Luce and Clark
first. Okay.
When we were going to go into the seventh grade. Mm-hmm. So we were either the next to last or last sixth grade class in Olney. Mm-hmm. And so then, boom, we went into Luce and Clark. So we did have a little precursor.
That's nice.
But being in Luce and Clark and Luce and Clark football team and basketball team and all of that was against Astoria. Oh. So when you 2 years later became a ninth grader and moved over there, then it was the enemy's side, but I mean, you know, kids are kids. And you get to know each other pretty fast.
You just don't.
But it's still country kids,
yeah,
versus city kids. Always was.
Oh, interesting.
And how often you talked about Astoria felt like it was 1,000 miles away. How often did your family come to town, and was it an event? I mean, were you all excited and I want to go to this store and that store, or was it a chore, or were you excited to take a drive on a Saturday into town or something?
Well, while it seemed like it was 1,000 miles away because my grandma lived here, my grandpa had passed away when I was pretty young. And my dad worked across the street at the auto. He was an auto body paint guy. After he got out of the military, he worked in various things from logging and worked at Builder Supply Lumber Company, and then ended up as an auto body paint guy for Lovell Auto.
Okay.
And so we ended up coming to town more often than not. But you know, our house was just a 2-room house. And it was a tiny house, and my grandma had a 4-bedroom house. So it was like you were going on vacation when you came from Olney to my grandma's house. And she had TV.
Oh, wow.
So we were
living a good life. Yeah.
I think I need to move in with grandma. Can we move into this big city?
Yeah. And she usually had a lot of Finnish women there because she gave Finn language lessons.
Oh.
Okay.
I love that.
So just because I'm curious, any memories that you have personally of the Lovell Auto Company or the showroom? I mean, did you ever follow your dad in or any talk around the kitchen table?
We would go and visit my dad there. And downtown across from the Liberty Theater, they had their auto show lot. And it's got had the brewery in it now and those little food carts. Mm-hmm. Well, underneath all of that was where the painting and the bodywork was. And so we would come and visit my dad. And I do remember, because the ramp going down in underneath, we would take the masking tape and have tape rolling contest to see who could get theirs to make it to the bottom. Yeah, which he would get angry with us because we're messing up with the tape. But that's pretty much what I remember of Lovell Auto. Other than buying the rigs there.
Yeah.
I love that.
So growing up then, what were you thinking that you were going to do when you grew up and got out of school?
I know exactly what I was going to do. Get the heck out of Astoria. And that's what I did.
You did.
I got the heck out of Astoria and went to U of O, graduated, and ended up being a marketing executive for Xerox in downtown Portland. And then decided I wanted to get the heck back to Astoria.
Yeah.
And through a series of events, I ended up back here.
And when did you come back? Like, how long were you away then?
In 1986,
okay.
I came back, and I came back to start my own company.
And your company?
It was Primark Inc.
Okay.
With that shopping center in Warren.
Yes, I was going to say, so you should recognize right. the name, because the Primark Center is
yeah.
a staple. And sort of like one, I mean, that's when things I feel like were just kind of starting to change a little bit for development in Warrenton, too.
Yeah. No, actually, I'd invented a product that I put together and patented and started selling it literally all over the world.
So Mark told me about this product, so please share.
That's what built the Primark Center. And actually, because of us, the city of Warrenton was able to get a grant to upgrade the infrastructure, which allowed Fred Meyer's to be built. So my Primark Center and my company allowed Freddy's to come to town.
So he does this all without my even prompting.
Yeah.
Kirk Fawcett is our guest, in case you haven't, if you're just listening, joining. But the invention, I thought you were going to say this helped mothers around the country not lose their mind.
It did. It helped me. I mean, because it was right there at the peak of Care Bears and Cabbage Patch Kids and all that. And my three kids had countless numbers of those, and they were all over the floor.
Yep.
I thought, man, if I could just get something to get them off the floor. And I was out elk hunting and just doing my thing, and drove down a road up in the mountains, and some gill netter had dumped his fishing nets in the garbage off the end of the road. I don't know who it was. And I looked at that and I thought, I could use that. So I cut a chunk off with my hunting knife, went home, and then that night I fashioned what became the teddy bed and put the dolls and stuffed animals there, and then went, wow, you could make $1 million doing that.
Yes.
And
it's
so
genius.
I proceeded to prototype it and figure stuff out, and 12 months later I made $1 million.
Oh my gosh, I love that story.
That is amazing.
Yes.
so how do you have this great idea, how do you get it to a store
to
or somebody, before the I could just buy it on the internet on Amazon or something. How does that show up at a store in Florida? I mean, how do you get that out there?
Well, remember, I was a marketing exec for Xerox. So sales was my deal. So after I prototyped it, figured out the exact design, so it'd be aesthetically pleasing and, you know, all the marketing parameters, mm-hmm. and then figured out, you know, how you can make it here in the United States without going to China or Mexico, but do it at a cost that you actually could sell it and make a profit. So I did all that. And then Toys R Us was a biggie then. And so I cold called Toys R Us, and they liked the idea, but then when they told me what they'd pay me for it, I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So I came up with this tiered system where I was going to go mail order first, and then that way my margin on the product would be its highest I could get. Mm-hmm. And I always figured that knockoffs, patent infringers would come in. And so the strategy was sell it through mail order. And then when the patent infringers come in, shift distribution channels and call up Toys R Us and say, okay, now I'll sell it at bulk at a bulk price. And that's exactly what we did.
Isn't it great? Yes. Yeah. The teddy bed, right? The teddy bed.
Yeah.
And it's meant to go in a corner?
It goes in the corner. Yeah. And we actually, because in the process of doing everything, I had hired an ad agency. They were really bad. And, you know, new to actually writing the check and overseeing all the photo shoots and all that. You know, I was new to all that. They made it, and we put our first ad in Parents Magazine. Okay. And I was waiting because I did everything. I sewed them and I manned the phone. I did everything. I was waiting for the phone call, and the phone didn't ring. And so then I was like, uh-oh, we might have made a mistake. And then finally it started ringing. And I never forget, a lady from New York City called me at 6 o'clock in the morning. So 9 o'clock her time.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, I just love your product. But I have to tell you, your ad is horrible.
Oh, that's so funny.
And I was sitting there thinking... And that's what I think too. But when I told the ad agency it wasn't right, they said, well, you're going to have to pay for another photo shoot. And I said, well, wait a second. And, you know, that was $5,000 back. And for a startup, I was like, oh no. So we'll just have to go with it. But the ad, the one shot, one time deal in Parents was, I think at that time it was $50,000. And, you know, so I was tacked out. Finally, I got enough to cover that. So then I fired the ad agency. Then I took over as the creative director for myself, redid the photo shoot, and then got a hold of Parents Magazine with the redone ad. I went from a third page to two-thirds page because I thought, well, people liked it. So if I come out with a big ad, they'll think, whoa, that company's really doing well.
Right.
And so I came out with that. But at the same time, I was able to negotiate with Parents Magazine and call myself my own ad agency. So I made Premark Advertising. So I got a 50% discount on the cost of the ad. And we put it in. 3 days. I was in the black, 3 days worth of phone calls after new ad, and it just skyrocketed from there.
Wow.
That is amazing.
And then in the end, I hired a graphic designer, and we did all of our own advertising, all of our own print stuff. Actually, my ad agency even did a brochure for the Maritime Museum and some of the other businesses around town, and we even created a television commercial, and we won number 2 in the nation with that television commercial.
Wow. That's so fun. I didn't know all these stories. This is great. Mark's been holding back.
I don't even know if Mark knew that side of the teddy bed, because Yeah, I don't think he did.
And so then how does this transition into, property development? And I mean, is that that?
A divorce.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
That always gives you life changes.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And so that was it. And I got divorced and bad things happen in divorce. And so then it was... And I'm not going to go into all the bad things that happened on that. But then I had a choice to go back to Xerox because Xerox was like begging me to come back. And I said, nah, I don't want to. And, you know, with what I do, what do you do in Astoria?
Right.
So I was like, oh, real estate, because a lot of... Because I was a trainer, a sales trainer at Xerox too. And a lot of the guys that I trained and gals became commercial realtors in Portland. And so they wanted me to come and work with them in Portland. But, you know, now I wanted to stay in Astoria. So I was like, okay. So I got a real estate license and started, you know, I had to sell houses for like a year. And then I finally got into doing the commercial, and actually I brought Venerable Properties to Astoria to do the whole Mill Pond development.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The only reason they came was they said they'd do it if I left where I was working and joined Venerable. So I did. And so then I got them through phase one, going into phase two, and now it's back to pretty much selling houses there.
Yeah.
So then I'd had enough years under my belt to get my own broker's license. And that's when Fawcett Commercial Properties was created and I left Art and Venerable.
Well, it seems like, I mean, throughout all this, I mean, you are still selling an idea, right? You're selling, whether it's a Premark Center or,
right.
You know, Mill Pond. I mean, so they're very unique too. I mean, that was unique at the time. Mill Pond's very unique.
I was the guy behind the initial getting Safeway where it is with Skip.
Okay.
Because I was doing commercial real estate and I got everything going with Safeway and I was selling them on the idea. But before it all ended, I'd got my broker's license. And so I had to leave the Safeway deal and Skip with Venerable while I started my new Fawcett commercial.
Oh, goodness.
So I didn't get to see that to fruition.
Yeah.
But I'm the guy who got it going.
As I say, you can claim it. So. Yeah. Oh, wow.
The whole expansion at the Maritime Museum, mm-hmm. I got that too.
Oh, okay.
They were stuck because they had a deal with the railroad, and the railroad owned a bunch of the land. And I spent 2 years... romancing the guys up in Seattle area for the railroad and got them to do the deal.
Oh, I love
with the
it.
Maritime Museum.
Well,
that's great.
We're going to have you back because I feel like there's a part two and a part three.
Yes.
That we have left in this conversation.
Yeah, the plywood mill worker.
Oh my gosh.
We do need to have him back.
But we're out of time, of course. It comes. I told you it would go fast.
Oh, and I can talk.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.